Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful day, wonderful week. Podcast time. So this week is, I'm really interested, really excited to bring this person. I have been aware of Temba for a while. And I love his music. He's makes very emotive, very unique music to what I'm surrounded by on a majority of my music career. He tours a lot in multiple markets, and is just a super lovely dude, very hardworking guy. And I really respect what he's done, especially from where he's came from. Temba is from South Africa, and has had an amazing life, really, really super interesting life. So I'm going to stop rambling on, and I'm going to let the podcast do the talking. So without further ado, Temba. Temba, what is cooking, man? How are you?
Yeah, amazing, bro. Really good, really good. I'm out in Johannesburg, South Africa at the moment.
Oh, amazing.
I'm actually in my bedroom, chilling.
Kicking back. So do you live in Joburg most of the time?
I think as it stands, I probably spend more time outside of Joburg and on the road, but Joburg is home. This is where my stuff stays.
So wait, did you grow up in Joburg?
No. So I'm originally from a province called Mpumalanga, which is in a direct translation is where the sun comes out.
Oh, wow.
I was born there. Then I moved to Johannesburg or Gauteng, the province, when I was 7 years old, and I've been here ever since.
So what other languages do you speak?
Nkulumisa Zulu.
Yeah.
Nkulumisa Swati. Ek prate bikkie Afrikaans and English.
Dude, that's crazy. Did you just learn those growing up? Was it just being around you?
It's basically like all the local South African languages that you would hear most of the time on the streets.
Yeah. What is the most common? Is Zulu the most common?
Zulu's the most common.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, there's a grouping of Zulu, Swati, Ndebele, and Xhosa. And those are called the Nguni languages. So basically, if you understand one of, you'll understand the others.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Damn, dude. It's crazy how many dialects and languages are in Africa as a whole.
Africa, it's wild. And while we're on this language issue, Like one of the most interesting things for me that I've seen, as you can hear, I speak the most fluent English, right? Yeah, yeah. So in South Africa, like learning and being able to speak fluent English is like you're well educated.
Yeah.
And you basically learn this language. It's not your mother tongue. If I speak broken English in South Africa, I'll get laughed at, really? Like flat out.
Really?
But yeah. But when you travel and you start to see the world, you're like English is from the UK because
yeah.
it's England, but I speak more fluent English than people in British, right? I speak better English than people in the US. And then like the biggest, like the most confusing thing for a South African who gets laughed at for speaking broken English is being in France, Spain, Germany, where people don't speak any English at all.
Yeah.
And push you to speak one of their local languages and don't understand English.
Yeah.
You know, like in South Africa, you're brought up thinking that like, this is the language of the world. If I'm equipped with like a good English tongue, I'm equipped with everything.
Yeah.
And when you travel the world, you realize very quickly that, man, should have rather learned Mandarin, Spanish, or Portuguese than French.
Yes, Spanish for me is definitely, like, I can't speak any other language apart from English, but Spanish for me is probably the other most important in our world, yeah. in like what we do, because South America is so big, Spain is obviously so big, and obviously you have Ibiza. It's a lot of Mexico. Well, Mexico is obviously a Spanish speaking country, but like even like in America, there's a lot of places that you go to Miami, like the first language isn't English, it's Spanish.
No, it's Spanish, exactly. Yeah, so like I'm actually trying to learn Spanish with great difficulty. Poquito español.
That's all I can say as well. Yeah, it's how is that growing up educationally in when you grew up? Like, how was that to learn another language?
So basically, like I started going to school in 1991. That's when I started going to primary school in 1991. And basically I was like one of very few black kids in a white school.
Okay.
So remember, like South Africa in 91 was actually just coming out of apartheid.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was no more segregation and blacks could go to white areas and go to white schools. So that's when I started. So already like I was still living in the township, which is it is what it is, and going to a white school and coming back to the township at night. So I was learning English and learning how the other side like lives, thinks and feels, and then coming back to the other side and basically like having to almost like sit back and okay, all right, because also like what you realize quickly is that like the more educated you are and the more fluent English you speak, the more you're also like you're a snob on the other side.
Yeah.
And when you get to this side, you underprivileged because you don't speak as good English as they do.
Yeah.
So that's basically my being like, that's when I started school. And even in matric, when I came out of matric, I honestly think I was, if not the only, there was two of us black guys in the whole grade.
Wow.
So yeah, like and yes, I'm one of the privileged ones, but my parents understood that like education was the key to success. So they made a lot of sacrifices in order for me to be able to go to that school. So where other kids were getting bicycles and whatever, I wasn't getting any of that stuff, you know?
Yeah. I want to talk about township upbringing, because it's a world very foreign to me and probably very foreign to a lot of people listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
And probably a lot of people that you come across nowadays generally, when you're kind of traveling the world.
Yeah.
Can you explain? I've been to Joburg once and I've seen Alexandra. It's called Alexandra Township, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen that and driven past it. But I'd love you to explain what a township is, because I think a lot of people don't even know what that is.
So firstly, I'll start by saying throughout my travels, I've actually seen that like there are far worse residences outside of South Africa
totally.
That are similar to a township. Like, for instance, the favelas in yeah. Brazil are insane for me, bro. That's like, I've never seen poverty at that scale. And also some of the living conditions in India are nowhere near. And also, like, you know, that scenic view that you see of the houses in the hill in Venezuela?
Yeah.
Like, not as bad as a township. So basically, what a township is in South Africa was, during apartheid, the government needed places for the black people to live. And so what they did is that, like, they basically built townships 15 to 20 minute drives outside of the main cities. So Alexander, where you went, is actually a township that's the closest to the CBD outside of all the other townships in South Africa. And basically, it was through segregation. It was like, okay, white people live here and black people live over there.
Yeah.
And then white people could build houses however they wanted to build the houses, and black people were confined into, you live in a four-bedroom house. And when I say a four-bedroom house, I'm not talking like you've got four bedrooms. You've got a kitchen, a lounge, and two bedrooms.
Yeah.
And that's the house for you to share with whomever you're living with. And basically, the rules back in the day were that, like, after a certain hour, you couldn't be, as a black person, couldn't be caught in a white area unless you had special permission. Mm. And everyone that was black had to basically travel with something that's called a dom pass, which is basically like an ID all the time.
Yeah.
So that's what it was. It was a convenient place for black people to live that suited the minority in the country.
Yeah. How was growing up in a township for you?
I'm going to say normal.
Yeah, obviously it's normal because it's all you know, right? It's all you knew.
I'm going to say normal. It's actually only when you start, like, seeing how the other side lives.
Yeah.
So I was fortunate enough, like, we moved to the suburbs when I was fairly young, but I still had, like, deep roots in the township because most of my family's there. In fact, we still have our old house in the township. And when you start seeing that, like, you actually start, like, questioning, like, what, you know, when you don't understand the concept of apartheid, because, like, I was born, and, like, when I was old enough to understand anything, like, as an example, the day Mandela was released, I said to my parents, what are you guys excited about? Who is this guy? Is he Jesus? Because, like, it was that big of an occasion when Nelson Mandela was released from prison. So it's only when you start hanging out on the other side that you're like, why is this place got better this than over there?
Yeah.
In the township, we still had gravel roads, but in the suburbs, it was tarred roads.
Yeah.
You know, they had toilets inside the house. In the township, our toilets are outside the house because we all share the toilet. And you don't. And in the suburbs, they have a bathtub. In the township, you bath in an actual physical plastic tub that you pour water in the morning. You have to boil the water, pour it in. Mm. There's no geysers. There's no hot running water. All of those things are things that, like, we were not allowed to have, and we started developing and having them later on in life. So you could clearly see the differences if you had to compare and went back and forth between the two.
Yes.
And also, just from a mindset point of view, like, when you're in the township, you literally think this is it and you can never get out.
Mm.
I mean, even in present day, they've built the township such that a kid who is in Soweto goes to school in Soweto. There's shopping malls in Soweto. Basically never has any reason to leave Soweto.
Yeah.
You know, unless he's ambitious too. So it's proper indoctrination and proper limiting of your mind and how far and how big you can think. And I can tell you now, like, I suffer from it till today. Black Coffee suffers from it till today. And it's conversations that you're continuously having, because you walk into certain spaces and your first initial thought is, I don't belong here.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole thing was about. It was about limiting your belief system to say, you cannot do more than what we tell you to do. I mean, for the longest time, a nurse, a doctor, and a policeman and a teacher were the four professions that, like, every black person aspired to, to do. You know, and anything outside of that, it was like, oh, this one's weird.
Yeah. How does it feel, though? when you walk into
also my parents growing up were my parents growing up were not allowed to buy a house outside of the township. Mm. So they could never even think about it, irregardless of how much money they were making, whether they wanted to or didn't want to. You were not allowed to. So even if you thought you, like the idea came to you, you were not allowed to. So it just shows you how the indoctrination would limit somebody's belief and thinking. Because there's certain things you just know that, like, I can't even do this. Even if I want to, I can't.
I guess it was, that was, without sounding horrible, but that was the whole point of it back then, right?
Yeah,
that was the whole reasoning behind that, is so that it was us and them, which is fucking crazy to think about.
Yeah.
If you think about it now. And it still happens in multiple places in this world, which is really sad to kind of think about. How does it feel? I want to go back to what you were saying about when you feel like you don't belong. How does that feel?
There's, what's that syndrome called that everyone has where you feel like you don't fit in somewhere?
Small poppy. Imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Now imagine imposter syndrome, but it's not a choice.
Yeah.
And you don't have the choice to think outside of imposter syndrome. Because imposter syndrome is you playing in your favorite club around the world and being like, do I really, you're here, but do you really belong here? And the latter is not even being allowed to be in that space.
Yeah.
So even in present day, like, you question yourself a lot, and there's just multiple and extra hurdles for you to mentally overcome before you get into a place where you're like, okay, this is me and this is okay.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So crazy, man. So crazy. Do you think that will ever change though? Do you think you'll ever work through that?
Bro, or... let me tell you, like, I mean, largely because I still live in South Africa.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, like, most of my, the people that I grew up with, obviously all from South Africa. Like, if you do something that's like the same as what I'm doing, like deciding that, like, okay, I'm going to be a global DJ and I'm going to tour all around the world. It's like, why do you think you can do that? You know, like, what do you think you're doing? And when you fail, if you fail, you have everyone saying, what did you think you like, this is all of us, you know? So everyone has like pull me down syndrome. And it's not because they're jealous. It's just because of how we've all been conditioned.
Yeah.
To the extent, like, in South Africa, when they congratulate you, they'll say, oh man, did you see Temba's DJing in Spain? It's like, yeah, Temba's gone. And when you think about what the person's actually saying, when you say Will Clark is gone, it's like he left us.
Yeah.
He broke outside the mold.
Yeah.
He decided to be different. He left all of this.
And is that, you know, is that looked at as a negative, in a negative way?
It's very negative.
Yeah.
It's very, but it's like, I don't think most people understand how negative it is. It's only when, like, I wouldn't say I've broken out the mold, but I'm in a better position than most, that when you think about it and you're like, when we're like, oh man, that guy, because they say uhambile, which means he's gone.
Yeah.
You know? And when somebody, maga hambile, it means that they've left you behind.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
And it's like, why do you think you're good enough to? And when you fail, like, they'll be the first people to be like, "Bro, but who, like, what did you think was going to happen? We don't belong in those spaces."
It's so fucked. It's really, yeah. It's, if you actually think, I know we can laugh about it, right, to a certain extent, but it's not funny, because
no, it's not funny at all, bro. It's a proper indoctrination, like, because your mind doesn't know the difference.
Yeah.
And for you to break out of that, you really, like, cross question yourself so much. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's something that, like, there's a saying called, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's called, a saying called tall poppy syndrome, which, when you're like the tallest poppy in a poppy field, but, and no one else wants you to be. And
yeah,
and,
exactly.
And there is that in, like, so, like, I've got friends that are in Australia that tour, and obviously you've toured in Australia, but there's a huge amount of tall poppy syndrome from Australia, and also to a level in the UK where it's like, you can, yeah, it is almost like that, but not it's not indoctrinated into our society where you're like told that you can't be successful, you can't be this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just more so people don't necessarily like to see people be successful.
Yeah.
Which is a different thing. But yeah, man, I couldn't imagine even trying to be in this industry and have that mindset in and still work through it.
Yeah, it's a tough one, and that's why, like, when we speak about it as South Africans, it's like, man, like, you know, we really need to have these conversations ongoing to break out of it, because like, it's very easy to drag yourself back, and yeah. Especially like if you have like a major lose, then you're like, man, do I really belong here? You know, yeah. Because also if you look at where South Africa is geographically located, we're the furthest from any country. You know, like, to get to America is a mission, to get to Australia is a mission, to get to Europe is a mission, you know?
Well, and also so the South African passport is not a, it's a hard passport, man. It's a hard passport to have.
It's a joke, bro. Let me tell you.
Because I'm pretty good friends with Kyle Watson, who's from South Africa. Yeah. And yeah, he's only just like recently been able to move to England, and his wife's English. And it's just like,
it's wild, bro. It's wild.
It's just not a good passport to have, which can make touring a lot harder as well.
Yeah.
I obviously have like briefly spoke to you on social media over the years, but I'm really interested in how you got to where you got to, and how the whole music thing started, from growing up in a township to having good education, but then converting that into music. And where you're at today.
So basically in South Africa, we, because of our history, what the youth of South Africa does is we sing and we dance.
Yeah.
You know, and now there's a third layer on top of that. We sing, we dance, we DJ. Mm. And now we produce as well. So we sing, we dance, we make music, and we DJ. So because of the dynamic of me going to a white school, I was listening to techno, acid, and whatever the kids at school were listening to.
Yeah.
Coming back to the township and listening to whatever the kids in the township were listening to. Going home and listening to whatever my parents were listening to. So I grew up with a very eclectic mix of music, and loved all those genres.
Yeah.
So I started collecting a lot of music when I was 11. And also, like, I was like, you know, I wasn't academic. I wasn't sporty. Like, I was borderline like one of the losers at school, and I collected music, and that was me. Like, everyone knew that, like, if you're looking for a new song, ask Temba. So I was basically like Shazam back in the day. Like, I would know everything, you know. Like, I'd buy CDs, I'd buy cassettes, I'd buy vinyl, read the covers, read everything, know who the producers are, who the vocalists are, try find the vocalists and see like what other songs they've done, etc. So I was like the music nerd. When I was 14, one of my friends was having a birthday party for his sister. And he said, Temba, you must come DJ at my sister's birthday party, one of my white friends. I didn't know what DJing was.
Yeah.
So he was like, you've got all this music. Like, what do you do with it? I'm like, listen to it. And he's like, no, come. So I took my CD player, my cassette deck, and my record player. And I was there just playing this one song, pressing stop, playing the next song. And while I was doing this, I'd noticed that, like, hey, if I play this, people come in and they dance, and if I stop and I play something else, they go away and they chill. And if I play something else, they come in, they're like, hey man, can you change the music and play something else? So that's when I started falling in love with the art of DJing, not from a mixing point of view, but just from a, like, being able to curate music in a way that, like, would jerk certain emotions and, like, keep people on the dance floor for as long as they possibly could. Another dynamic that we had in South Africa was that, like, records weren't coming in as often and as much as we would have liked them to.
Yeah.
So literally, like, if you wanted a record, you were either getting all the stuff that the big DJs didn't want, or you were lucky enough that one of the DJs didn't want the record at the time and only realized later on that, like, hey, this is actually a big record. So getting music was the most difficult thing. And I'm talking like, you're a, what, 14, 15, 16 year old kid. You're still in high school. The thought of even getting on a plane is not, like, mission impossible. Yeah. You don't even think about that. So everyone who is getting the music is like importing, and it's like the big record shops that are importing. So yeah, I ended up starting to produce my own music, and the reason was that because I couldn't get the records that the big DJs were getting. So I was like, well, they have the music that I would want. Why don't I make music that they won't be able to get?
Yeah.
And at the time, it was just like around that time where CD players were coming out. This is like 98, 99. Started like fiddling around with the FL Studio, Cubase 32 back in the day. Yes, then started producing like that. Then when I was in matric, I stopped DJing completely. First year of university, I got back into it. End of the year, I landed a residency at one of the biggest clubs in Joburg. And by pure chance, Huzu.
Huzu, okay.
So what I used to do is that, like, I used to carry 12 records with me all the time. Because in my head, like, 12 records was an hour of music.
Yeah.
And if I played the B-sides, it was 2 hours. 2 hours. So I used to carry I'd go to varsity, I'd have my school bag and my record bag.
Damn.
Also, it was just like a cool way to, like, you know, get girls, because it's my record bag, I'm a DJ. You know, it was a cool talking point.
Your backstrap must have been amazing.
Yeah. And the one night after varsity, I used to carpool with a DJ that's actually quite big even till today. His name is Naked DJ. We used to carpool home together. And he had to go drop off stuff at his brother, who was working as a promoter at this nightclub. So we get to this nightclub. It's like just after 9 o'clock. And the brother's like stressed, man. And he's like, man, the DJ that's supposed to be here is not here. He doesn't know what to do. And I was like, hey, man, I've got my records. I can play. And he's like, what? What do you know? And I was like, just trust me, man. Like, I'll hold it down. I went, I played. The owner of the club came out from the office and was like, walked into the DJ box and was like, who are you? And I told him, hey, man, like, so in South Africa, I used the name Euphonic.
Okay.
And he was like, oh, okay, listen, from now on, come back every week.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's how I got my first residency. Then fast forward to present day in South Africa, I'm doing radio shows. I'm doing compilation CDs that's like are selling big numbers, playing at every festival, party, nightclub that you can imagine, doing TV shows, et cetera, et cetera. And then in 2015, 2016, I started getting bored.
Yeah.
Of like what was happening in South Africa and like where the music scene was going in South Africa, because it's very easy for you to hit rooftop very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So I started exploring like the international market. And previously to that, I was already going to Miami Music Week every single year since 2009.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, so the difference between the world, the rest of the world, and South Africa is that in South Africa, you can be eclectic and you can play open formats, but the rest of the world wants to know who are you and what do you do.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Right. And in South Africa, you care, most DJs pride themselves by being either the Louis Vega of South Africa, the David Guetta of South Africa, the Calvin Harris of South Africa, or the Solomon of South Africa, because we honestly don't believe we can be as big as that.
Yeah,
you know, and
I've heard that saying so many times talking about South Africa as well. It's interesting that you say that. I have heard that.
Yeah. And then when if you're going to have the conversation with like a Kyle Watson, a Black Coffee, a Temba, whoever else is touring the world, like you hear how difficult it is. Like the passport thing, first of all, like how you navigate around having multiple visas and multiple passports so that you can like eventually make it to these shows. Like it just starts being like a mind thing and you're just like, man, just shut this conversation down. It's easy to just tour here. So I basically was like, okay, I want to try be something else, start a whole new thing from scratch that's literally just about nothing else, no thrills, just about the music.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not going to use an alias for this. It's going to be me, and I'm going out into the world as me. And that's why I use the name Temba. So Temba's my real name. Temba's the name on my ID and passport.
What was the reasoning behind going for your own actual name? Because nowadays it's very easy to not have your actual name as an artist. It's been like that for years, right?
Yeah, it was basically the whole concept around, I'm going to be as myself as much as possible, and I can't be something else, and I'm not going to try and be something else. I'm going to be the best version of me as much as possible. And if the world accepts it, good. And if they don't accept it, that's also cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, there's a level of ownership when it's like that as
also,
well.
Also, Themba in South Africa, every second guy's name is Themba.
Oh, really?
It's one of the popular names for men in South Africa.
I didn't know
that. And what I noticed is that, like, when I was thinking about a name, I was like, hang on, if I just fly out of South Africa, Themba is very exotic. So when anywhere else you are in the world, if you say Themba, they're like, oh, that's so dope. Is it an African drum or what is it? You're like, nah, it's just another name. It's like Paul, John, or Michael, you know? And what Themba actually stands for is, you can use it in multiple ways, but it's faith, trust, and hope.
Okay.
Which is also like one of my mantras. Like, I have the biggest faith in myself. I trust in the power of the universe, and I hope I get my way.
Mm, amazing. So you go, so you decide to become Themba or start a whole new alias. And then what's the next steps to get to where you're at now?
So first of all, the steps are music. You make music, because music is the beginning and the end. It's the alpha and the omega.
Yeah.
It's the reason why people are going to take interest in you. It's the reason why people are going to listen to you, and it's the people why people are going to grow with you. So I just started making as much music as I possibly can. And I didn't try and orchestrate a sound per se. I was like, what do I like? And I was like, okay, cool. And I created a palette of the sounds that I was liking, and I went into the studio and I made music based on that. And that's what that was my primary focus. And even when I was, you know, putting the music out, like, I'd give it to like my friends and be like, what do you think about this? You know, and I'd listen to the feedback and I'd come back to the that. But so around 2016, when I made that decision to try and do this thing, I literally used to go to Ibiza every year and sit in the corner. I'd pay to get onto all the clubs. I'd sit in the corner and just be like, I'm a punter. I'm here to listen.
Mm.
And I'd sit in the corner and listen. So I threw away the fact that, like, you know, I was like top five DJ in South Africa. I was like, I want to go ground up and build this thing again from start to finish. And in order for you to do that, it's very important for you to keep quiet and listen.
Yeah.
And when you listen with no misconceptions and without expecting anything, a lot of things come to you. So what I was doing is I'd go to all the big clubs and, you know, even the small clubs, even the bars, and I'd sit and just watch, you know, how are people consuming music? How is the DJ playing? How is he walking into the DJ box? How long is he playing? What story is he trying to tell? When he gets off the decks and the next DJ comes on, like, what does that handover look like? What's the next DJ playing? And that was it for me. I was just doing deep diving into the research, deep diving into the music, deep diving into the culture, and trying to understand for myself, okay, fine, I see what's going on, but if I was to fit in, how would I fit in?
Yeah.
Where would Themba's place be if this was open to me?
Do you think do you think it's about fitting in?
What I think is that it's definitely about fitting in, because otherwise you are made the black sheep of the family. Yeah. And if you think about anyone's career and anyone, how most people have started, they started by fitting in, and then when they were in, changed things from the inside.
Yeah.
And grew from the inside.
Yeah.
You know, I don't conform to fitting in. But I do believe that, like, to a certain extent, you have to be palatable to people. Then when they have your taste on their taste buds, then you can grow out of that, because, like, now they have your ear.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's about how do you fit in with a sound but also still have your own identity.
Yes, of course. You know, there's a way in. And then when you're in, there's a way to grow. So for me, again, it wasn't about who's the biggest DJ on the island. And that's what I want to go for, because I would have been at all the EDM parties. You know, instead, I was like, what resonates with me?
Yeah.
And I was sitting in those corners listening and be like, I like this.
Yeah.
You know, and coincidentally, one of my favorite parties was either the Cocoon parties, listening to Sven Veth, or listening to Luciano.
Yeah.
So those were my muses. Those are the guys that I was like, okay, this is the kind of music that I like.
And back then, those guys were still the biggest guys on the island as well in the grand scheme of things. With what
yeah,
they, with
but
what
you
they
see,
did.
From a South African point of view, I didn't know them at all.
Oh, really?
Because
wow.
Underground in South Africa, underground in the rest of the world is literally like,
yeah,
like deep, 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 they are. You know, wow. Whereas like in South Africa, we grew up knowing like the likes of Louis Vega and
yeah.
types.
Yeah, yeah. That yeah. makes sense. Yeah, I guess is does the scene in South Africa.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How is the scene in South Africa generally growing up and going to parties and things like that? Is there like an underground techno scene, underground house scene?
There is, but they're very niche.
Yeah.
And the underground stuff, like the really underground stuff it exists, but it's very niche. What a lot of people don't know about South Africa is that like, a dance music record or a house music record on the radio can literally play before Beyonce and after Drake.
Okay.
And 4-year-olds in South Africa sing along to house music.
Love that.
The music is on the TV. It's on the radio. It's basically a part of our lives.
Yeah.
And it's because UK, US, and all that music outside of South Africa was considered international music.
Yeah.
So we didn't draw the line between Beyonce and Louis Vega. For us, it was one and the same.
Okay.
Whereas if you're in the UK, like there's a clear distinction between Jamie Jones and Adele.
Yeah.
Those two things don't mix. Whereas in South Africa, they did.
Yeah. I guess the interesting thing though in the UK is that majority of the top 40 is dance music.
Yeah.
There's like a culture in the UK that allows dance music to be very successful on a commercial level.
Yes.
However, but there's like commercial dance music and then there's underground dance music, which are two completely different things.
Yeah. So in South Africa, the commercial stuff and the underground stuff that broke it out of the commercial stuff, and we didn't know the difference because we must remember when you're South African and you're so far away, you don't know if Louis Vega is bigger than like the next artist.
Yeah,
it's all the same to you.
That's wild. It's weird to think because like growing up for me, it was like dance music was part of the culture of growing up. Like electronic music was what we did as kids. Is what Britain did was go out raving. That was like the one thing that kind of brought everyone together. And to kind of think that you didn't really have that at all. It was completely different culture where you're not having nightclubs and it's not about the rave or the free parties or anything like that. It's kind of crazy to think how you then evolve into a career in dance music.
Yeah. I mean, like in South Africa also, like one of the most interesting things, like especially in the townships, like the guy who curates the playlists and the soundtrack of your street is basically like that cool uncle,
yeah,
who on a Saturday or Sunday, like, will play records from his house and take the speaker and put it outside.
Amazing.
For the entire streets to hear.
Amazing.
So if he was the guy that, like, you know, on different streets, it would be the guy, he'd either be a jazz guy, or dance music was called international, or he'd be a Motown guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, how we consumed music also was very, very differently, because it was like, you've got the record. Where did you get this record from? Yeah. And if you had the record, you are one of few people that had the record. And if people wanted to hear that song, they had literally had to come to your house to listen to it.
Yeah. Wow. It's crazy. How do they consume music now in the townships?
Largely the same way the rest of the world consumes music. And also in South Africa, we've got a dynamic where we still get charged for data. Like, so you'll buy like maybe like 1 gigabyte.
Really?
And it's super expensive. And when you download a song, you obviously have 1 gigabyte less the data that it took for the song. So South Africans don't understand that when you download music illegally or pirate it, that you that it's piracy. Because for them, it's like, it can't be piracy because I paid 100 rand for this gigabyte and now I've got 95 rand. So I paid 5 rand for the song.
No way.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I've never even thought about it like that, but that makes complete sense if that is the situation. Damn.
Yeah. So, that's wild. So, but like the streaming services are quite big now at the moment, but also like with this new wave, like Amapiano, guys are literally like giving the music out for free.
Yeah.
Kids will make a song now, bounce it now, go to the club, play it now, tomorrow, like upload the song and give it to everyone for free, and then worry about getting it on streaming services once it's like a hit on the streets.
Yeah. It's really interesting how I was literally talking about that this morning, how music is changing because of streaming. Because like pre Spotify and Apple Music, it was SoundCloud, and everyone would just put everything on SoundCloud.
Yeah.
And it was very instant, and you could literally make a record and upload it straight away, and you still can. But that kind of went away when Spotify and Apple Music and all of the streaming platforms came in, and you could actually earn reasonably good money from Spotify. Yeah. But now with the way streaming's going, that's kind of been taken away again. Like, that you can release a record and you don't ever know if it's going to do well, and the likelihood of it generating any finance is very different to at all. So it's kind of almost going back to how the SoundCloud days and the Bandcamp days of when people were just putting music up and just seeing and creating hype on a organic level, which is really interesting to me. But then it completely changes you, like how you and I would release, because we've kind of gone past that. But then do we go back to that? What's your thoughts on that?
Look, I'm a firm believer that just give the music away for free, bro. You know, just like, if you just think like as an artist, like the amount of time, effort, energy that's thought into like how you're going to release this thing, when you're going to release this thing, you know, like put it out, give it to the people, see how they consume it. If it catches a fire, like follow the fire, follow the trail. Also just the amount of time that it takes away from the actual creativity of the music.
Yeah.
Because now you're worried about other things. Like, you're worried about, like, are my Spotify listeners high enough every single month? And now that's the only thing that you focus on. But you don't know if the music's getting downloaded illegally or pirated or being played more on YouTube than on Spotify. So we're all, like, you know, worried about all the wrong things. Whereas if you just, like a bird, let the music and set it free, like, how far could it go without you trying to orchestrate, control, and restrict where it goes?
And also, I guess, in to talk about like Spotify monthly listeners and everything like that, doesn't necessarily mean you're successful as a touring artist.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I mean, like, I was having this conversation the other day that, like, there's artists who are signed to major labels with really good deals but don't have 10% of the touring schedule that I have. You know, so it's like, what do you want?
Yeah.
You know, and I think once you know exactly what you want, like, it's easier to chase that. But the whole world is saying to you, like, oh, what about your Spotify numbers? What about your Instagram followers? And it's like, you know, like, you look at Marco Carolla and Solomon and how often they post or curate their face, their Facebook, Instagram pages. They hardly do, but look at them.
And also, how even are they, like, how often are they even releasing music nowadays? It's just,
and
like,
look at them.
Yeah. But I guess the, I guess in argument to that, right, like, they came from a different era that was purely based on very, very fucking good music. And and they created a community, which is still very important nowadays. Community is key for me, from what I gather. But it's also like, how do you create that community in a world where there's so much to consume? Back then, when they were, when those kind of guys were releasing, there wasn't that much to consume. Which is definitely different now. Super different.
I think if you are a sophisticated music lover and listener, it's the same. There's not a lot to consume when you're sophisticated at it. As the consumer now, it's still the same, because like a sophisticated consumer knows exactly what they're looking for and knows exactly where to find it, you know. And they'll like, and you see these people, it'll be someone that like, oh, I was at your show in New York, now they're in Morocco, and then they're in Paris, and then you see the same person in Dubai. That's a sophisticated person. And
totally.
I know I'm saying this person is across multiple territories, which means it's someone that has enough money to be able to travel. But you see it on the socials as well. Like, this person will be like, hey, I listened to this, and there's this song that you played. I'm looking for this song.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like that type of a thing.
Someone I totally agree. But do you think the way streaming and do you think that's actually taken away a lot of the sophisticated listeners? Because it's more so like, you get fed what you're told that you should like on these playlists and everything like that. You get fed a playlist of music that necessarily doesn't, you're just told this, listen to this. You're not actually going out and searching for it.
Yeah. Look, I think a lot of the sophisticated listeners are still crate digging largely. Yeah. You know, like, they're going onto YouTube. If you drop a mix, they'll go and listen to it.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll be like, oh, this is cool. When does this come out?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, versus the stuff that's already out. And I think it's similar to when we're playing in the clubs. If somebody can Shazam a song, it's like, come on, play stuff we can't Shazam.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're actually out there to look for.
I love
you
that.
You know, and
I love and seeing then, and that.
And then you'll play a song, they'll Shazam it, can't find it. And I promise you, bro, like, they'll record a video of you playing the song and they'll hunt you down for years.
Yeah.
Saying, when is this coming out?
Yeah.
And for me, that's one of the dopest things. And which is how I also like curate my sets. My sets are 80% my own music.
Yeah.
Out of the 80%, half of it you can't find.
Yeah.
The only other time you're going to be able to listen to that song is if I've posted a video on YouTube or you come to the show to listen to it.
Mm. No, I'm exactly the same. Most of my sets are my own music. And for me, I think it's like, I was talking to my manager about this the other day, and I'm actually still like having this battle in my head where I'm questioning who I am as an artist. And that's purely is, I've always called myself as a DJ. But I'll be totally honest with you. Like, in my mind, what a DJ is a DJ is somebody that create crate digs and finds interesting music that people don't know or people do know and can control the dance floor.
Yeah.
And get kind of entertain. We're entertainers. Whereas I'd like your take on it, because now, and for a long time, most of my sets have been all my own music, which means that a lot of my sets, they're not the same, but they're using a lot of the same music.
Yeah.
And does that make me really a DJ? Because because it's not.
But it's right. It makes you an artist.
Yeah.
You know, like, I went to watch David Guetta at Shwaya. I think it was 2018 or 2019. And I was like, why is it that you can't pull the music out, put your own music in, whatever it is, underground, whatever, and just do it as big as he's doing it?
Yeah.
Because if you go to a Guetta show, that's what it is. Like, you love him or hate him, he's playing his own music. So you're actually at a concert.
Yeah.
Just doesn't sing. He's just playing his own records. I've had the same question for myself because, like, I'm of the view that if I'm playing in different territories all the time, my sets are unique because I'm playing music that you can't get a hold of.
Yeah.
Either way, the only time you can listen to those songs is if I'm playing it.
Yeah.
Any other time, you can't. So does that make it wrong or does it make it right? Because I'm playing, in essence, the same music over and over and over again at the shows. But in my head, like, you can't find this music anyway. Yeah. So whether I played it over and over again, it makes no difference.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you.
But what I do think, and where I think this whole thing is going, and it is going to get to at some point, is that if you look at like the Tale of Us shows at the moment,
yeah,
like, that's an underground act doing stadium festival size production at all their shows. Now, could an act replace the music with their own music from start to finish, and that's the show? And I think the answer to that is that, like, it depends on how and how big you're doing the shows.
Yeah,
so if you're be a club DJ and, you know, you're playing multiple clubs around the world and this is the music, you're wrong. Like, you still need to be a DJ and curate music, because you don't know that, like, the guy that was in Moscow is now in Morocco and is coming to Paris and is coming to London, because for that guy, it's going to be like, this is the same.
Yeah.
But the perception is that, like, if you go to a Drake concert on different territories, you know that, like, he's going to perform these songs and I'm here for these songs.
And you have to hear those. And if you don't hear those, you're not. It's, well, I used to tour a lot with MK, and that was the one thing that I learned from, I used to be managed by the same managers as him, or when his old managers. And that's the one thing I learned from them, actually. And it was that mentality of play your own music, because they're coming to see you. They're not coming to see anybody else, especially how DJ shows are now. They're not, unless you're playing a little basement in an underground club somewhere, like, people come in to hear your biggest records and they want to hear your biggest records. It's like the DJ's kind of taking over the rock band vibes.
And you are that.
In answer to the question about the Tale of Us, I was talking about this the other day as well. And it's amazing what they've done. I really respect what they've done. But again, it goes back, I don't think and this isn't in a disrespectful way at all to the music, because the music creates a huge amount of emotion and is very emotive, but I don't think the people necessarily go to listen to the music now. And I think you see that by the amount of phones that are out taking videos.
But also, bro, if you just think about it, a lot of people don't say, I'm going to listen tonight. And I've seen that with my friend, you know, with Natty.
Yeah.
People say, we're going to see Black Coffee tonight.
Yeah, 100%.
We're going to see David Guetta tonight. Yeah. We're going to see Temba tonight. So people are going there to see you. And I think just the music and whatever else you come with is an added layer.
Yeah.
And I think just by listening to, like, the people that are coming to consume your shows, like, what are they saying? You know, like, I'm coming to see you tonight.
Yeah, it's definitely a very interesting concept, because it takes it away. Like, if people are just coming to see you, then does that mean that you are an artist, or does that mean that they're just not fussed about the music and they want a bigger show?
Yeah, and then there's, we're going to rave tonight.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm going to Temba tonight.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean? What is that person saying? Yes, Temba's a DJ. Temba's known as a DJ, but he's also known as a DJ that makes and produces his own music. So what are you actually saying? Are you going to a concert? Are you going to, like, what are you actually going? It's an interesting question that we need to ask people.
Yeah, it is really interesting, because I think, like, the origins of a DJ is, it wasn't about the DJ, it was about listening to the music and just escaping reality, right?
Bro, funny enough, like, one of my residencies. I used to play at, like, it was a restaurant bar in Joburg, South Africa. And basically, because they weren't allowed to have a DJ box, the DJ box was in the office in the back. And you're literally playing by yourself. You'd have to open the door to check if people were still dancing or not, and then close the door. And that was, like, one of the best testing grounds, because, like, you can only see after you've played the song if it's, like, okay, it's working.
Yeah.
Then you close the door. Now you don't know if the next record's going to work. Mm. You know, and if people are screaming outside, you don't know if they're screaming because of you or because something else has happened.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's hard work. How is the scene in South Africa now, in the underground or the house and techno scene?
For me, I'm going to say it's disappointing at the moment. It needs a lot of work. There's a lot of punters. There's a lot of people who consume the music, but it's just the work and the curation around the actual shows and the places in which we consume the music. That's the only issue. There's a lot of music being made by South Africans. Man, it's insane. A lot of good quality club music that's being made by South Africans. I'm going to say the scene musically is growing, but show-wise declining.
Yeah. How is your career in South Africa now? Are you, like, a king or not?
Look, when we come out, like, yes, you know, like, we're very, very, like, I'm very praised in South Africa. I'm considered one of the thought leaders, considered one of the people that, like, broke out the mold.
Yeah.
Especially with the Euphonic and the Timber thing, and starting from scratch, it's like, wow, man, that's like, you've got nine lives, you know? And it's also, like I always say, like, the biggest commodity that anyone in Africa has is hope.
Yeah.
Like, forget the money, forget everything else. If you can give someone hope, bro, like, that you too can do this, that's gold for them, you know? So I try to, like, play less, because, like, I don't like to be frustrated by the politics of getting to a club and the production's not right and the sound system's not right and, you know, just the things aren't done right. So I choose to do my own shows in South Africa. So we started something called Deep in the City like 2018. And after European summer, when we come back, we do a residency, and we basically, it's just about the music, it's just about the sounds, no thrills, no frills. There's no VIP, there's no tables. And it's literally just about the music, you know, because I think at some point we have to revert back to that, you know?
I agree. I think also it's reverting back is very good to educate the newer generations on just creating and playing amazing music. Because I think it's very easy for new artists to now think that you have to be a Tale of Us, or you have to be, like, that big where you have to be creating everything on top of the music. It's very easy to, or, like, even so with social media, you look at, like, Mojack, right? Like, everyone now thinks, oh, we have to make a viral video. And kind of, you can get caught up in that, the rat race of, like, trying to be everybody else, trying to do what everybody else is doing, yet forgetting about the actual one thing that is the crux of the whole industry, and the clues in the name is the music.
Yeah. Like, my thoughts on that, like, and I've seen this from, be it South African acts or acts from overseas. Like, if you're going to put a record out, make sure that it's a record that even in the worst part of your career, it's something that you're willing to stand by.
Yeah.
Because at the best part of your career, like, you're going to play that song so much that it's going to either bore you, or you're going to carry on having the same level of excitement that you had when you made the record initially. Yeah. And we both know how that goes, man. Like,
100%.
You know, like, I've made so much music. I've got a lot of songs that are like are big records. And every single time I play them, I actually don't get bored of playing them, because like, I'm very intentional about the music that I put out. Mm. You know, like, somebody said to me, like, one of the advices that I got when I was starting with Temba is that the music that you put out is as important as the music you don't put out.
Yeah.
So everything that you put out needs to have careful consideration, because it's a piece of art that ultimately represents and defines who you are.
No, I totally agree. And it's also, which is really hard to do. Like, for instance, for my career, like, I've had a long time as Will Clark. Like, I've never had another name. And during my career as Will Clark, I've gone from, I guess my first big break in the music industry was with Dirty Bird, which made a, which is a record label that makes very different records to what I make now, or they release a lot of different records. So it's like also being able to tell the story as an artist on, okay, well, this was my era then, and I respect that era for what it is, but this is where I'm at now. And how do I kind of, how do you tell that story to go from here to here so it all makes sense? And I think that's also the interesting thing, is like, you can, I put some terrible music out from over the years, from my, from the start of my career. But that was purely naivety of where, of thinking I have to put music out and not question.
I know exactly what you mean. Because also, like, in South Africa, with us being allowed to be as eclectic as you possibly want, I've got some euphonic records that I'm like, man, what was that? Why would I put that out? You know, but like, I look at like my Timber catalog with such pride, bro. Even the music that's about to come out, I'm so proud.
It's amazing, man. It's really good.
What I want to do. And also, I'm not in a rush. Like, I'm not in a rush. I'm not under any pressure. So if I'm making music, like, it's ready when it's ready.
Yeah.
I sometimes have like, you know, I'm working on version 8 of a song.
You know,
And when I do put it out, like, I'm so at peace with where this record is, like, when it breaks, like, the little detail in the song.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and I think that for me is that, like, one of the most important things, because over time, that's the one thing that you're going to leave behind that everyone's going to go back and listen to you and listen to. Yeah. And if you just fast forward to your obituary the day you die, and you're being buried and they're reading out things about you, and somebody's like, man, Timber died? Let me listen to his catalog. Like, bliss.
Yeah. That's the amazing thing about how we consume music now as well, is that you can just go and listen to anybody's music with like a click of a button, which is a beautiful concept. I want to talk about how your touring career kind of, because you tour a lot and you have...
Yeah.
You play some big shows and you play worldwide. How did your touring career? Because we spoke about music and releasing music, but I think I think they go hand in hand. But looking from an outsider point of view, is like they're kind of also separate of like how you release music and how you tour. And your touring is huge as well. So how did that kind of start?
You call it touring, I call it planting seeds.
Yeah.
I call it planting seeds. I call it opening as many territories as I possibly can. I call it experimenting with the world to see that when I am at the level where I want to be, which places do I want to go back to?
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it for me. And I think if you're in the process of planting seeds, you want to go to as many locations as you possibly can. And not make it about the money.
Of course.
Because a lot of us say that, like, you want a massive touring schedule. But, like, for me, it's like at the moment, and if you'll notice now, like, moving forward over the next 2 or 3 years, that, like, I'll play less in certain places and play less in a month, because, like, now I'm able to pinpoint, I want to go here. And when I'm here, this is where else I want to go.
Yeah.
Whereas, I think a lot of DJs like restrict and limit themselves to the places where they want to go.
Yeah.
You know, there's stuff that happens to you and there's stuff that you make happen.
Totally.
So I'm saying that, like, make a conscious effort about going to as many different out of your own comfort zone places, so that, like, you know the better for yourself that, like, I've been to this place, I don't want to go there, and this is the reason why.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I've been to this place, and if I am to grow in this place, this is how I can do it. You know, so it's like deep diving and understanding that, like, if your music is traveling fast, you need to try and travel as fast as your music.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. But how did you? Because it's very easy to, like, have successful records on the streaming platforms, right? It's not easy, but that can be done very quickly by just getting on playlists and things like that. But, like, how did you go from, okay, I want to tour the world, to actually touring the world? Like, where does that start for you?
So it's the music. Yeah. So 2018, I was very, very lucky, bro. Like, super, super lucky. Like, you know, when, like, stars just align and everything about this one thing is so perfect. You know, I had this record that was a demo. I was releasing music out on Knee Deep. Had a record that was a demo. Just dropped something on Yoshitoshi Records. And I so happened to give a bunch of music to Black Coffee.
Yeah.
And he came back and he was like, I really like this song. And I was like, that song's not part of the plan. These other records are the plan. So if you're going to play, like, don't play that one, play this one. And he was like, no, this is the song that I want to play. You know? And basically, like, he started playing the record. The record is Who's Temba.
Yeah.
Right. And at the time, I was also, like, trying to, like, to tour. So I was on the same management as Black Coffee with RIT. And Lionel was like, every single time I try to sell you, people are like, who is Temba? Who is Temba? Who is Temba? It's like, no, I've got this guy from South Africa, Temba. They're like, who is Temba?
Yeah.
You know, and I had a stab in the record that went, who? So Lionel was like, man, you should call this song Who is Temba? Because that's the one question that I get asked so much. So that's what I called the record. I called the record Who is Temba?
Yeah.
And what happened is we sent the record out to, and now listen to me, every record label that you can think of, and all of them declined. And with my experience from South Africa, I was like, in South Africa, we don't sign to labels, you know, like most acts release stuff themselves if they're not signed to a major. So there's no, like, these smaller labels. So I was I'm just going to create my own label. I'm going to put this record out myself. And that, to date, is one of my biggest records.
Really?
So that for me, I think, is like having the courage to say, man, I can identify that there's something big happening here. Everyone that I would want to get their support on this is not supporting me. So I need to be able to put this thing out by myself.
Yeah.
And man, by the end of that summer, bro, like Tale of Us, Solomon, Luciano, obviously Black Coffee, all of them were playing the record. And I'd never given it to I'd never given it to them. So I think all of them figured out after the fact, like, wow, this record is dope. Even David Guetta was asking about it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the most, and I stand to be corrected, but I think it's one of the most defining Afro melodic house tracks that's out there.
Mm. In what sense?
In the sense that at the time, like 2018, was when there was a lot of talk about Afro house.
Yeah.
And I think that song stayed in the top 100 for 18 weeks or something like that.
Jeez, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Yeah. What's your thoughts on the whole Afro house scene? Because it's got huge now.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts and feelings on that?
I understand why people like it, because it's like that booty shaking music that's got soul.
Yeah.
And South African producers, unlike, and I'm not trying to offend anyone in this, unlike the big techno or the techno producers, make very emotive music.
Yeah.
That is not functional.
Yeah.
So tech house largely is like very, it's functional. It's like, there's no emotion to it. Whereas when you listen to an Afro house record, like, it's going to jerk at your emotions in one way or another, whether it's the strings, whether it's how the bass line is done, whether it's the top line, whether it's the drums. And all you need to do is look at how girls dance to it differently to tech house to see that, like, okay, it's a different thing.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say the whole girls thing, because it's, the power of having females like your music is so powerful.
Yeah. Especially now, bro, you know, because I think also like the world just came out of a very, very dark place.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone wants to be happy, you know, and it's, if you're going out to party, what do you want? Do you want the functional stuff or do you want the emotional stuff? And do you want the stuff that's going to allow you to like, you know, like it's got like a groove that you can't help but like tap your toes and move your booty a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's also, it's like, it's doing something that's not just to, it's not just for the function. It's not just to be functional. It's not just to be make a tech house banger. Mm-hmm. It's to do something that feels right. And for me, it's like, for me, like, obviously I would say I make tech house, but I wouldn't say I make tech functional tech house records. I make I make music that's a blend between house and techno. Are they functional records for other DJs to play? Not necessarily, not all the time, not at all.
Yeah,
but they're functional for my sets, which I guess that's also the thing for you, is you're making records that work in your music, in your sets. And if another artist happens to like those and play them, then you're onto an absolute amazing winner. Yeah, it's great.
For me, that's my entire approach. Like when I'm making a song, like how do I feel about it? Am I excited? Am I like, man, I can't wait to play it. And then for me, if there's one other human being that enjoys it, like I've already won.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing that.
So like no pressure for the music, you know?
Yeah, totally. How's your summer looking?
Summer's looking very, very good. I'm not doing a residency this year. In Ibiza, that is.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the shows. I'm again like opening territories where I've never played. And what I like to do is that like when everyone's looking right, I want to look left and be like, what's everyone not looking at? Yeah. And that's where I want to go, you know, because then like I'm one doing something that looks unique from everyone else's point of view. But at the same time, like I don't want to have to even feel the pressure of everyone else or have to succumb to other people's pressures, because that's when you start like tripping and falling over yourself.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Totally agree, man. I totally agree. And I think it's also, it's if you can be a step ahead, and when that step ahead comes around, you're at the forefront of that step ahead, it's really a powerful position to be in.
Yeah, because me, bro, like another thing about me is that like I'm a nerd for this thing. Like I love this thing. I want to have my involvement leave this thing at this place a better space for the next DJ and producer to come in.
Totally.
You know, so even like I'm very conscious about the things that I do as well.
Yeah.
You know, like if somebody comes and says like, but Temba did this as well, it needs to be like, okay, this was cool because it was also moving the scene in its entirety forward, you know. And I think also like if you see like the work that we've done in Ibiza, whether people want to recognize it or not, but Ibiza at the moment is more vocal than ever before. It's more soulful than ever before. It's more emotional than ever before. I mean, like you go to Circo Loco and hear the music that's being played at Circo Loco now, wasn't happening 4 or 5 years ago.
No.
You know, you listen to how Marco, Solomon, Ramp, and me, the kind of music like how most of the biggest DJs in the world are playing. They're heavily influenced by South Africa and what's going on in South Africa.
Yeah.
In one way or another. You know, like if you went to Circo Loco a few years ago and somebody played like a sing-along, like Cairo's Your Voice, it would be like, why would you do that?
Yeah,
but now it's the thing.
Yeah,
you know, so like I think I'm really enjoying like everything that's happening at the moment. It's a moment in time.
Totally.
You know, like really part of something very, very special, you know, because it's like when the scene shifted and you were there to like partake in it.
Yeah I agree, man. It's really interesting. It is a really interesting time. There's levels of the industry that's really interesting, and I think the amount of collaborations between artists that you would never even think of collaborating, and the size shows that the artists are doing, and also the amount of people, the amount of people that come into shows on a regular basis is just unbelievable.
Bro, like, you must see what's going to happen in Europe this summer and just watch it subtly. The fact that Drake can leave the US and come to Europe and party in Ibiza and party in Saint-Tropez.
Yeah.
You know what that's opening it up to? It's opening it up to anyone who isn't into house music to say, location-wise, let me just go party at that place.
Yeah, I agree. So,
musically, I don't know whether that's going to be a good or a bad thing. I don't know whether the hip-hop DJs are going to start coming to Saint-Tropez. I don't know whether the hip-hop DJs are going to start coming to Ibiza. But naturally, that's what's going to happen. And now you've opened up Europe to the whole of the US and largely to the whole of the world because they weren't paying attention to it. Anyone who's a hip-hop head wasn't paying attention to it. But like now if Drake's paying attention to it, you know, Diddy's been coming
for the longest time. Yeah, that's the interesting thing. Like, like David Guetta and the Swedish House Mafia, when they had their moment before EDM turned into EDM, they were also doing that at that time. And it kind of opened the world up to like a level of commerciality to dance music. And now it's doing, we're kind of going back through that in a bit more of a cooler way. And I don't like to use the cooler way, but it's in a bit more of an underground and organic way rather than just writing really commercial records. It's super interesting, man. I'm really excited to see kind of what can go with it.
I mean, for me coming from the place where I come from, like my favorite end of the night record is "I Will Survive," as an example.
Yeah.
Well, no, that is the song "I Will Survive." In the UK, that is a cheesy wedding song.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would you play that? I can't believe like you just played that. In South Africa, it's one of the coolest dance records from back in the day.
No way.
So you have this dynamic where, like, for me, in my opinion, underground and commercial are as a matter of opinion and not as a matter of fact.
Totally agree.
Because depending on where you are, Swedish House Mafia, "Don't You Worry, Child" is an underground record.
Yeah.
And in some places, it's like, I've never heard this before. What is this? Yeah. Wow, that's really cool. So, you know, it's also just that understanding. And this is why it's important to sit back and watch, because then you understand that, like, oh, okay, where I come from, this is okay and it's not frowned upon. But here, it's frowned upon.
Yeah.
No, you know, agree. So if I am going to do this, I won't do it here. But also now with the power of the internet, like if you've done something in Colombia where that was like, man, wow, he played that song. And in that moment, the crowd was wow. When that video goes up on YouTube, guys in the UK are like, ah, come on. Told you.
Yeah, you're right. You're 100% right. Dude, let's wrap this up. We've just done an hour and 15 minutes. Thank you so much for coming on. Before we go, how can people follow you? How can people kind of get in touch? How can people be part of the Temba movement?
I think first of all, thank you so much for having me on the show, bro. I really appreciate it. And like really dope questions. I wasn't expecting those types of questions. It was an awesome conversation and I appreciate it. It's Temba on Instagram, T-H-E-M-B. And when you say Temba, the H is silent. So it's Temba.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I started speaking to you. So I apologize. I've called you Themba.
No worries, everybody
for the whole time I've known your music. So it's now Temba. So yeah.
Yeah, don't worry. Pete Tong's done that so often. I'm like, oh.
It's just us white people, like, mate. Us white people just can't speak it. It's fine.
And yeah, man, like for me, hit me up on Instagram. Website temba.dj, and largely like what I want to get out of people is like, where must I come to, you know, where should Temba come, so that like we can vibe together, we can experience the world together, experience some cool music together, and yeah, just basically grow this thing that we all love so much called house music.
Amazing, man. I love it. Keep safe, have a great summer. Hopefully bump into you over Ibiza at some point.
Yeah, that'd be amazing, bro.
Yeah, cool.
Let me know if you're in town for sure.
I will. Peace out, man. Big love. See you soon.
Thank you, bro.
Bye, man.
Bye.
And that is a wrap. big love for Temba for coming on. Really enjoyed that one. Hope you did. If you did enjoy it, please share it. Please send it to your mates. Give us a little review. Keep safe. See you next time.
Get ahead of postage rate increases this year with Stamps.com. It's like your own personal post office. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.